I heard some of you got your families living in cages, dark and cold. Some just stay there and dust away past the age of old. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. I just wanna know about the rooms behind your mind. Do I see a vacuum there, or am I going blind? Or is it just a remains of vibration that X was long ago? Things like love the world and let your fancy flow. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. I have lived here before, the days of life. And of course this is why I'm so concerned. And I come back to find the stars were placed and the smell of a world that is burned. A smell of the world that is burned. Yeah, well, maybe maybe it's just a change of climate. I can dig it, baby. I just wanna see. So where do I put my ticket? I just like to have a ringside seat. I wanna know about the new Mother Earth. I wanna hear and see everything. I wanna hear and see everything. I wanna hear and see everything.
Daddy could see me now. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, August 11th, 2021. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio at blogtalkradio.com every Wednesday at 5:30. Of course, other days, Monday, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al, Mondays at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, Tuesdays at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Eric brings you radio-free Kafiristan. Thursdays, the deplorable Paul Sutliff brings you the Sutliffian Report at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Fridays, can go anywhere from noon or maybe even 2 o'clock Eastern, just depending. Conservative Casual Friday with Andrew Herod. Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. And then, of course, Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Hey, if you want to call in on any of those shows, dial 319-527-6706, and you can listen. You can interact. All you got to do is hit the 1, and a little icon pops up to tell your host that you would like to speak with him or her, or they, or we, however you want to use it, whatever pronoun you choose. You can also email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can come to this website, blogtalkradio.com, look for live, click on it, go down to the lower right, and you'll see Global Patriot Radio. That's the good thing. Every day, you'll see Global Patriot Radio, and you'll know we're here, we're active, we're chatting. I'm on Twitter, of course, at HPolySports. I'm on Facebook. And, of course, again, 319-527-6706. Got a listener there now, and we've got someone in the chat room, Indie Hawk KB, who was part of our show last week, talking about the kerfuffle that is the Big 12 and the Southeast Conference. Mrs. Hank is in the house, as is our adorable little Aussie. Cute as a button, that little doggy. She really is. Hey, last week I missed an obituary. I missed the obituary for Mr. Infomercial. No, not Vince from ShamWow. No, not Billy Mays. Billy Mays already went on to that OxyClean warehouse in the sky. No, not Emeril. Not Mick of Mick and Mimi. Not anyone else. Nope, we're talking about the granddaddy of infomercial innovation, Ron Popeil. Ron Popeil, the Dial-O-Matic, the Pocket Fisherman, Mr. Microphone. Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later. The Popeil pasta-making machine, the Ronco dehydrator, the Showtime rotisserie, GLH, a.k.a. good-looking hair, which was spray-on hair. The various incarnations of knives, be it a ripoff of the Ginsu or the Miracle Blade, whatever it was, he always called it the Showtime 6-star 20-piece cutlery set, and many more. The guy was a legend. The world lost him to a brain hemorrhage a couple weeks ago at the age of 86. I will be the first to say he poured a ton of innovative, albeit cheesy in some cases, but innovative products into our national conscience. He really did. I mean, his dehydrator got me to request a good one for my birthday one year, or maybe it was Christmas. And my parents went out and they talked to a few places who they ended up buying me a really good one from American Harvest. So I got into making jerky and dried fruits and all kinds of stuff. Still make stuff with it, a different one, but yeah, I'm still a dehydrating fool. Hot peppers, chicken. I may even make dried chicken treats for our little Aussie, believe it or not. Anyway, Ron Popeil passed away a couple weeks ago at age 86. Farewell to Mr. Innovation. Last week, we also lost beautiful Bobby Eaton. He was a stalwart member of the Midnight Express, a tag team in professional wrestling, along with Dennis Condrey. He was a member of the team from 1983 until 1990. He actually teamed with Dennis Condrey at one point, then Stan Lane. He basically in the NWA, WCW incarnations of the Midnight Express. Later on, from 2004 to 2011, he was part of it within various regional and independent promotions. He actually held that tag team championship in NWA or WCW on three separate occasions. He also held the WCW television championship for a very brief time. After his tag team partner Stan Lane, as well as the manager Jim Cornette, bolted from WCW over some booking issues, he stayed on as a singles wrestler. He later joined Paul E. Dangerously Dangerous Alliance, which until it was eclipsed by the NWO, that they had more members than Spinal Tap. I mean, at one point, everybody was part of the Dangerous Alliance, and later on, everybody joined the NWO and its various incarnations. Anyway, RIP, beautiful Bobby Eaton, gone way too young at age 62. Last Saturday, we lost a really beautiful and talented actress, Marky Post. She'd battled cancer for several years. She was 70 years old. She was in The Fall Guy with Lee Majors. I'd forgotten about that because I never really got into that show. She made her mark in Night Court in the mid-1980s. Later worked with the late John Ritter on Hearts of Fire. And then one of her last roles was on a show I really liked called Chicago PD. She played Bunny, the oft-estranged mother of Aaron Lindsay, which was a character that was played by Sophia Bush for that show's first six or so seasons. As a matter of fact, Sophia Bush and Marky Post's Night Court co-star John Larroquette and several others actually paid tribute to her on social media. Really sad news. She was not Oscar caliber or anything, but she was a good actress. She was funny. She could play serious roles. And yeah, she was just, I remember Rush Limbaugh talking about her one time. She was of course, like most of Hollywood, very liberal, but he talked about her coming up to him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner one year and actually inviting him. It appeared that he had no one to sit with. He of course did, but she invited him to sit at her table with her friends and said, come on over, you know, it'll be fun. You know, she was, he talked about how gracious she was and how friendly and sweet she was. So, dear departed Rush Limbaugh earlier this year, Marky Post gone at the age of 70. Sunday, we lost a college football coaching icon, Bobby Bowden, longtime coach, 12-time ACC champion, 2-time national champion, all with Florida State, passed away after a short battle with cancer. He was 91. He was a consummate gentleman and a consummate Christian to the end. Had talked before about, you know, yes, it's the end, but he's not afraid, and he's lived a great life, and he was looking forward to where God was taking him. Actually spent 6 seasons as the head coach at West Virginia, and in during that time, remember Marshall had lost their whole team in a terrible plane crash. He helped their next coach rebuild that program while he was the coach at West Virginia. He eventually took the FSU job, led that program, which was an afterthought, turned it into a national powerhouse. He took his teams on the road to play at blue blood programs, Nebraska, Michigan, other schools, Notre Dame, of course, took his teams there. And then by the late 1970s and early 1980s, FSU itself was the equivalent to those blue blood programs. He won the national title via poll in 1993 with an Orange Bowl win over Nebraska. Then he won a BCS title over Virginia Tech in 1999. He coached two Heisman winners, Charlie Ward in 1993, the first national championship year, and then Chris Winkie in 2000. Yeah, Grandpa Winkie, who was about 25 when he some of the coaches on his coaching tree include his two sons, Tommy and Terry, as well as Jimbo Fisher, now at Texas A&M, Kirby Smart at Georgia, Mark Richt, who was at Georgia and Miami, Skip Holtz, Rick Stockstill, and Manny Diaz. He's a true legend, Rest in peace, Coach Bowden. Very, not sad news, but, you know, it's the end of an era, no doubt. And then this week we lost sprinter Cameron Burrell. Now, this is kind of ironic. He was the son of two noted sprinters, Leroy Burrell and Michelle Finn. He passed away Monday at age 26. No cause has been given yet. His father, Leroy, created the 100-meter world record back and forth with his rival and friend and later assistant coach at the University of Houston, Carl Lewis. Cameron Burrell was trying to make the U.S. Olympic team earlier this year, along with his former teammate Elijah Hall. He won an NCAA title while coached by his father at University of Houston back in 2018. He also broke his father's school record 2 different times. He led Houston to 2 4x100-meter relay championships at the NCAA track and field meet. Oddly enough, I was just reading an article featuring him and Elijah Hall just about a month or two ago. In the Red Bulletin, which is a sports magazine put out by Red Bull. I couldn't find anything about him competing at this year's trials. Appears he did not run in any of the heats. So anyway, prayers for his family and friends. This has got to be a brutal shock to them at just 26. Rest in peace, Cameron Burrell. Yesterday, we lost Chicago Blackhawks icon, goalie Tony Esposito, to pancreatic cancer at age of 78. The younger brother of Boston Bruins scoring machine Phil Esposito, Tony O, as Blackhawk fans called him, led Michigan Tech to the NCAA hockey title in the 1964-65 season. He played parts of 2 seasons then with the Montreal Canadiens as a backup to legendary goalies Gump Worsley and Rogachin Vachon. Actually won a Stanley Cup one of those years. He made his name really from his very first season with the Blackhawks in the 1969-70 season. He won the Calder Trophy as the best rookie. He won the Vezina Trophy as the best goalie. He also set a modern-day record that season with 15 shutouts, hence Tony O as an O goals. I can't tell you what this guy meant to young Blackhawk fans back then. Along with Bobby Hall and Stan Mikita, Tony Esposito was a Chi-Town hero. Chicago sports scene at that time was kind of dismal. You had the choke by the 1969 Cubs, the continual dismal showings from the Bears and the White Sox. And the newer NBA franchise, the Bulls, weren't exactly setting the world on fire. But in addition, at that time, youth hockey in Chicago was bigger than Little League. It was bigger than Pop Warner football or playground basketball. Many of my friends and I played organized hockey as our first team sport, our first organized team sport. And those that played goalie emulated Tony Esposito in numerous ways, whether it was holding the stick left-handed, which was unconventional, rare at the time, putting his number 35 on our shirts, or making the paper masks, goalie masks that looked like his. Yeah, most newer fans won't remember him, especially in light of a couple of Stanley Cups for recent Blackhawks in this more modern age. Make no mistake, though, he paved the way and brought hope to Chicagoland hockey fans. And unlike other Blackhawk players who jumped to other teams or other leagues, Tony Esposito was a Blackhawk until he retired after the 1983-84 season. He was named to the National Hockey League Hall of Fame and had his number retired by the Blackhawks in 1988. Goodbye to a Chicago legend, Tony Esposito. By the way, no evidence that he's any relation to our own Vito Esposito. I double-checked. No, I don't think so. Let's get to a little bit of sports news. The Olympics concluded over the weekend. The U.S. men's track and field team had zero gold medals on the track, anyway, right up until the very last event, the 4x400-meter relay. Thankfully, the team of Michael Cherry, Michael Norman, Bryce Dedman, and Rye Benjamin nearly broke the Olympic record, actually. They ran a time of 2:55.7. Rye Benjamin won the silver medal in the 400-meter hurdles. Remember, he obliterated the old world record time that gold medalist Karsten Warholm had set last month. Anyway, Rye Benjamin ran his anchor split in 43.2, which kind of explains why he can run 46.13 over the hurdles. And yeah, my guess is he could have won the open 400. You know, it was funny. There was some event jumping. Fred Curley, who has normally been a 400-meter runner, won silver for the U.S. in the 100. In the 200, or in the 100, Trayvon Bramell didn't do anything. In the 200, Noah Lyles didn't improve at all in winning bronze. He ran the same time that he ran at the trials. But Kenny Bednarik from the U.S. got the silver. Both sprints, the U.S. did not get gold. Didn't medal at all in the 400 or the 800, you know, or the 1500. We just got a bronze in the 5000, I believe. Maybe in the steeplechase as well. Ryan Krauser got his gold medal, set an Olympic record in the shot. Silver in the pole vault. The rest of the events, not great, if at all. Women did a little better. The U.S. finally did get the overall gold medal. I mean, they already had the overall medal league, but they got the gold medal league on that last day, the last couple days. I don't know what to think. I mean, are we glad the Olympics are over? Yeah, a little bit. It drags on, and you know, it's really become less and less about representing your country. I mean, you wonder why some of these people even go. I mean, they don't seem to care about the country at all. They don't seem to want to represent the country. They seem to just want to badmouth it. So yeah, why should we really care? You know, at a certain point. I know a lot of people don't. They really don't. They just kind of figure, you know what, this is just not, just isn't there. It's a tough call because I love it. I love the track and field portion. I like the swimming portion as well because they are races. Races, you know who wins. You don't know who's on steroids. Actually, you do know almost all of them now. But the concept of amateurism is gone. You know, the dream team, really dream of what? I thought the dream was to send our amateur athletes and be the best they could. yeah, we knew that, you know, the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc were sending pros. But, you know, we were still competing and usually beating them, especially in basketball. Now, God, track athletes are making it hand over fist. I mean, these guys won't show up to a meet if they're not getting, you know, getting the goods. So, yeah, it's lost a lot of its luster. But still, there's nothing like a good track meet to get things, you know, to get the competitive juices flowing, to, you know, to sort of raise the blood pressure, get the heart rate going, just to watch it. There's an excitement about it, no two ways about it, but still, it's not the same as it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. I admit that. And people say, you know, why do you care now? It's like, you know, there's no more amateurs. Yeah, but, you know, we also have golf, and I've talked about this with Al and Vito a little bit. I'm not sure golf belongs in the Olympics, but if it were amateurs, I wouldn't have a problem. I mean, if we were sending our collegiate golfers, but you know what? I mean, why, you know, when you know other countries are going to send them, and you know that, you know, now that the International Olympic Committee has changed all that anyway, but if you already knew that other countries were sending their pros, yeah, it's kind of hard to be proud if we get the floor wiped with our athletes. And it begs the question, why do they want to go? I mean, why does a college athlete want to go to run against a guy who's juiced up and paid by his own country? When our athletes, as Ronaldo Nehemiah talked about, couldn't even get his own, you know, endorsement money paid out. What's the use in that? What was the point? So, yeah, I get it. I get why guys, you know, didn't want to do it. But it also takes some shine off the Olympics. No doubt about that. And college football camps have opened up. We're starting to see depth charts, seeing interviews with coaches and players. And, yes, we're seeing name, image, and likeness deals popping up on social media and elsewhere. People are starting to post their tailgate recipes. You know, you go to your Hawkeye Nation, Hawkeye Report. You're seeing people, hey, what's your best tailgate recipe? We're seeing that. Even on ESPN, they're, you know, tailgate recipe stories, favorite game day traditions, those kinds of things. Teams are talking about their starting quarterbacks or heralding them or hounding them, depending. Talk of conference expansion, realignment or implosion has sort of gotten into full swing, except it's last couple of days it hasn't. Anyway, be happy, man. Folks, be happy. This is the greatest time of the year coming up. Yeah, we'll see new faces. We'll see new stars, new Cinderella teams. I mean, who's this year's Liberty or Coastal Carolina? We'll see new teams in the rankings. I mean, again, Coastal Carolina is in the preseason top 25. It means fall. It means the leaves changing color. It means the smell of burning leaves in those places where they haven't completely outlawed it. Or just the smell of fires in camps or cozy little homes. It's a glorious time. It really is. Meanwhile, down in Texas, the NCAA has imposed a 4-year probation, including some recruiting restrictions, but not this year, on the Baylor program. No, not for the sexual assault allegations, but rather for some impermissible benefits and, quote, improper recruiting, which involved a female hostess group. Yeah, in the olden days, the more prudish of us called them prostitutes. The NCAA did not ban postseason play, at least yet. They didn't take away any scholarships. A former staffer was given a 5-year show cause order. In other words, no punishment where it was deserved. Kind of like the Michigan State case with Larry Nassar, the NCAA has suddenly shied away from taking a stance on sexual assault issues. Would that Penn State had received that same lack of enthusiasm from the NCAA. Ironic, really. At Virginia Union, freshman defensive end Quandarius Wilburn died over the weekend after collapsing during a practice. Certainly it's sad to see, but, you know, let's keep it in perspective. It's tragic, but it's an isolated incident at this point. You know, I mean, it's sad, but let's not rush to judgment and immediately say, was the practice to this, or did they not look at that? Believe me, these guys, they are taking physicals, especially in light of COVID. Yeah, in fact, he didn't play last year in his high school because his high school didn't play due to the COVID pandemic. But sad, but let's not jump to conclusions. But also, let's think about his family and his teammates and the school. At Auburn, 2 year starting defensive tackle Tyrone Truesdale. Apparently, he's no longer with the team. Reasons haven't been disclosed, nor is it clear whether or not he could return. Also from Alabama, or off Auburn, former linebacker Craig Ogletree. He played on three straight SEC championship teams from 1987 to 89. He has died of COVID at the age of 53. Ironically, Craig Ogletree served as pastor at the funeral of his former coach, Pat Dye, who had tested positive for COVID during his bout with kidney-related problems before he passed away last year. In the Big Ten, this is all you need to know when it comes to the possible fate of the conference. In an article from The Undefeated, Commissioner Kevin Warren stands by his decision to cancel the 2020 season 1 year ago. And here's the rub. Warren and the author of the article in which this appeared pretty much peg it as Warren's decision. Frankly, if Big Ten presidents and chancellors, along with Big Ten athletic directors, are going to let this kind of grandstanding by Kevin Warren go unchecked, they'll be looking for a new commissioner sooner rather than later. But to his credit and lack of shame, not lack of ego, Kevin Warren is kind of revising the history a bit. He is quoted in the interview saying he and the Big Ten did the right thing by postponing the season. Yeah, that would be fine if Kevin Warren wasn't already on the record saying it wouldn't be revisited. Remember, it took parents and players and, yes, President Trump at the time to reverse the course of that. Remember, parents were delivering letters to the Big Ten office. Players were on all over social media. Yeah, so then they reversed course. Yeah, frankly, let's hope Kevin Warren isn't too close to Dopey Joe. Then again, it'd be kind of hard. One would be hard-pressed to believe he isn't in regular contact with the likes of President Throws Like a Girl, Barack Obama, Party Like It's 2019, or Senator Corey Never Miss an Opportunity to Profit Booker. Seriously, I mean, you know that those folks are all in contact. I mean, Kevin Warren cared more about getting out the vote last year than he did about a Big Ten football season. Let's move on to some politics. Why not? I'm about to give you the very definition of the phrase in the tank. Get this. Goldman Sachs, and let's face it, between government bailing them out multiple times and the general leftist leadings of their leadership historically, this should surprise no one. Goldman Sachs says the unemployment rate will hit 50-year lows by 2022. Yes, folks, Goldman Sachs, believe it or not, is in the tank for La Dopey Nostra. They see 4.1% unemployment by the end of 2021. They say unemployment will drop to 3.5% by the end of 2022. This despite the economy on a net basis has shed 5.7 million people from payrolls since March of 2020. Good God, man, did Goldman Sachs not see last week that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that Congress needs to approve an increase in the debt ceiling or the U.S. government could default on its debt as early as October or November? I mean, this is so in the tank, it almost begs this question. Who from Goldman Sachs got to attend Barack's birthday bash last weekend? Oh, here's a gem from the article, which appeared on Yahoo on Monday. It was given by one Peter Buchvar of Bleak Advisory Group. That's what it's called, Bleak Advisory Group. He said this, bottom line, after losing 22.4 million jobs in March and April of 2020, we've since recovered 16.7 million of them. Which begs another question. How are they claiming an unemployment rate of 5.4%? mean, given the job numbers that this clown quoted, only 75% of them have been recovered. So how in hell does that equate to only 5.4% unemployment? I'll tell you how. Discounting the obvious fact that it doesn't. It's this. We are being lied to on all fronts. But really, this is beyond the pale as far as being in the tank. A Texas Democrat judge blocked the arrest of Texas legislative Democrats for fleeing Texas for D.C. in order to avoid voting on the election reform bill. Remember, Governor Greg Abbott had called them back into session again and again. Numerous Democrats failed to appear. Somehow these Democrats sued the governor on the basis of being, quote, a protected class. Yeah, friends, you heard that right. These scumbags are calling themselves a protected class. What's next, man? Blocking all arrests of future criminals? Oh, my God, don't tempt these people. But can you imagine if Republicans walked out of Congress just to prevent a quorum? Frankly, the fact they haven't should probably tell us a lot about many of those in Congress with an R next to their names. I would need Hawkeye Mike to clarify. By the way, be in prayer for Mike and his mom. She's going through a little bit of a health challenge right now. But yeah, I would need Mike to clarify whether that could actually happen. But it would seem to me that quorum breaking should be front and center for the GOP when Dopey Joe says we have arrived at an infrastructure bill, and then he promptly goes against the spirit of that compromise. Aha, but an update. Early yesterday, the Texas Supreme Court overruled and vacated the decision by the Democrat judge, and Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan signed an arrest warrant for the 52 Texas House representatives who absented themselves from proceedings on the proposed election reform legislation in that state. As is typical, one Republican, Lyle Larson, or maybe it was Kyle Larson, criticized the move on Twitter. Why? According to him, quote, civil discourse took a nasty turn today, meaning yesterday. How so, man? I mean, the turn was already taken when the 52 Texas House Democrats refused to appear in their elected positions to take up legislation. I mean, that's an abdication of elected office. Frankly, each of them should resign or stand trial to show cause or return to session. Those are the choices. Not showing so a vote can't be conducted is absurd. It's irresponsible, and frankly, it's unconscionable. Look, vote no if you disagree with the bill. Tell constituents and your voters why you voted that way. I have no problem with people getting front and center in front of the cameras to say why they voted no or why they disagree with the bill. But not showing up because you disagree with it? Bravo to Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas House for moving this forward. According to the New York Post, Dopey Joe is looking for a way to impose an executive order overriding governors in places like Florida, Texas, along with other states that prohibit mask mandates, seeking a universal masking mandate in public schools. Folks, this one comes down to parents. My wife and I were out walking this morning. We saw some parents with masks walking their kids to school, some kids without masks walking to school. It's up to parents. It's as simple as this. Go along with it. Fight it, or in the extreme, pull your kids out of public school and go the homeschooling route. It's not hard. Again, look, if a business wants to require masks, you don't have to shop there. But if you continue to shop there, abide by their rules or their requests. That's not hard. It's also not hard to engage in polite discourse. Say, look, I am vaccinated, and I am stymied by a mask, and I'm not sure that a mask protects me in the long term. I don't want the risk of germination by mask. You don't have to pick it. You don't have to say your rights are being violated because, frankly, they're not by a private business. Look, I don't like universal mandatory vaccination, but I'm vaccinated. But I still don't like it. If someone doesn't want to get vaccinated, that is their choice. If someone wants to get vaccinated, that is their choice. Now, Here's the kicker, though. Apparently, though it's not making any headlines in mainstream media, CDC has actually revised as much as 50% downward case numbers in several states, including Florida. Now, 50% of, quote, what number is a good question. But the bottom line is that between revising numbers as well as recalls on certain COVID test kits, it's clear that numbers we are hearing or reading cannot be trusted. Again, a caveat here. I am not saying COVID isn't real or that people are no longer getting sick. In fact, I've known several people that have contracted it in recent weeks, including frequent listener and show guest T. Bodie, including friends of mine. Not doubting that. I'm not denying that. Friends of my wife, coworkers, former coworkers, and their families. Some have been vaccinated. Some early on, in other words, early on after vaccination, they contracted it. But it's happening. I get that. What I am saying is that numbers aren't adding up. Science isn't making much sense, frankly. And whatever the end game of Big Left is, and we pretty much know the answer to that, continuing to politically weaponize COVID is a head scratcher to me. Look at various stats that are thrown around. Delta this, new cases that, hospitalizations thence and therefore. Oddly, or maybe not, we are not hearing certain statistics regarding deaths or death rates. Yes, we're getting anecdotal stories of people who were anti-vax, later getting COVID and imploring people to get the vaccine as they pour forth their regrets. We heard about Dick Farrell, anti-vaxxer, radio show host. He recently died from COVID. We're hearing those anecdotal stories. I get that. We're not hearing anecdotal stories of people who are getting it and no other problems. As Indie Hawk KB just said in the chat room, 17 months of flattening the curve for 14 days. But we aren't seeing or hearing hard numbers. Some of what we are hearing certainly raises doubt and it increases skepticism. The number of new cases in people who are vaccinated, the seeming disconnect between those numbers versus the pleas, exhortations, and outright shaming of the unvaccinated, it begs this question. If people who are vaccinated are getting it, and there is no clear-cut reason why the unvaccinated can catch it from the vaccinated and vice versa, why the push? I mean, what is the goal or the aim? I mean, I have a hard time believing, since Operation Warp Speed was put in place by President Trump, I have a hard time believing that they set out from the beginning to put poison in our bodies. Is there a tracer? I don't know. But what is the goal or the aim? I mean, why do the goalposts continually get moved back and forth, up and down, side to side, in circles? I mean, what in hell is the goal? But if the goal is, quote, health, then it's a non-starter. If the goal is protection, it's a non-starter. Here's why. For decades, Big Left has trumpeted about being the compassionate, the advocate, the protector, and even the savior. To what end? Nothing positive or successful. If it's about the end justifying the means, there ain't much in the end department that they can tout. If it's about intent, then that's even simpler. From a conservative perspective, conservatives simply have to be loud and vocal about the faulty nature and the self-serving goals of such intent. Look, a party that trumpets reproductive rights, including not protecting the unborn, and wants us to believe my body, my choice, then doesn't live by that. When it comes to adults, being in control of their own health or health care when it comes to vaccines or that of their children, it doesn't take a village to raise a child. But it does take a village of captive children to indoctrinate those children. But they know this, too. They know they can't indoctrinate a child who is loved and cared for by parents and have zero chance of it when those parents are engaged and involved in the lives of their children. Look, how can a party or a group claim to want to protect when they themselves don't live by their own mandates and edicts. Look at Lollapalooza in Chicago recently, the Obama birthday party last weekend, all the protests in Portland, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Minnesota, and elsewhere, all of that done with no concern for the spread of COVID. In fact, the Obama birthday bash folks are still trying to their damnedest to scrub all the social media that shows them maskless, in close contact, dancing, drinking it up, et cetera, indoors, no less. Yet when it's the Sturgis rally or any Trump rally or businesses or schools, Big Left won't stand for any gathering that's seemingly not within their control or within their fan base. Look, Fauci and now CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, they are so bereft of credibility, it's hard to understand why anybody quotes them, let alone interviews them. I mean, why they are even acknowledged is questionable at this point. And here's, you want to hear things turn completely upside down? Chet Hanks, the son of Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, who basically, they arguably started the weaponization early on in the pandemic. He's gone off on his own social media rant about vaccine being a personal choice. Whether or not he lives to see another birthday remains to be seen. And I'm only half joking when I say that. So again, I ask, what is their goal here? I mean, I don't get it. I asked it the other day on Vito and Al show. Is this about a retread of the 2020 election strategy? That to me won't wash, or at least it shouldn't. Election reform laws are part of that, but so is a vigilance on the part of individuals who want their own votes to count. I get it. Big Left is counting on the opposite, i.e. they're counting on casual conservatives saying, what's the use, and staying home. That may be where conservatives can take their own stance on absentee balloting, get the word out that, yes, your vote may have been blunted in 2020. But if we work together, we can and we will make this right and whole again. Again, though, finally, just what is the rationale behind Big Left's continual political weaponization of COVID? I'm not seeing it. I just don't get it. I mean, my wife even points out, a lot of people seem to be getting sick. Most of them have been unvaccinated. Most of them just caught the wrong luck, if you will. But, again, not seeing numbers of deaths. We're hearing numbers of hospitalized, but then those get, once they're hard questioned, that gets scaled back. Just not getting it, folks. Somebody please enlighten me what the goal could be. La Dopey Nostra has called on OPEC and Russia to boost oil production as a response to rising gas prices. I am not joking. I am not joking. La Dopey Nostra actually called on OPEC and Russia to boost oil production to stem the tide of rising gas prices in the United States. I can't even begin to understand this idiocy, this insanity, and the level to which they'll shrug off shame at having done their damnedest to decimate our own booming petroleum industry that was built up the last 5 or 6 years. Seriously, we became the biggest energy producer, and we were all but the largest energy exporter during the Trump administration. To see it nearly destroyed with a couple of pen strokes isn't sad or demoralizing. It's frigging horrifying. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan actually released this statement. Higher gasoline costs, if left unchecked, risk harming the global recovery. Does this clown not realize that most of us understand they don't want a recovery, at least not in terms of average folks being part of it? Worse, though, is that La Dopey Nostra can't even acknowledge the hypocrisy of decimating our own petroleum industry in the name of, quote, going green with two capital G's. including executive orders to mandate that most cars be electric by 2030, and then lamenting rising gas prices and their own lead role in it. Unbelievable. OPEC, their recent promise to increase production by 400,000 barrels a day between now and the end of the year isn't enough, according to La Dopey Nostra, to, quote, ensure reliable and stable global energy markets. Good God, what in the hell is the problem with these people? Are they that economically dense that they fail to understand that decimating the U.S. energy industry will never be offset by increased production elsewhere, nor does that make it a zero-sum game? Imploding our own production doesn't equate to successful commensurate production elsewhere. And it sure as hell doesn't equate to American access to those energy markets. Idiocy, lunacy, and demagoguery wrapped tightly together, with the only possible result being a downgraded energy industry here in the United States and a subservience to energy production elsewhere. My God, it takes a special kind of stupid to do that and to think that it won't pay off in one huge collective kick in the groin to the U.S. economy. In what can only be termed somewhat of a shock as part of that gargantuan $3.5 trillion proposed budget, the Senate approved an amendment banning the use of federal funds for teaching critical race theory in public schools. The amendment from Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton narrowly passed by a vote of 50 to 49. Point is here, sometimes hell really does appear like it occasionally freezes over. Yes, New York Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, has resigned over sexual harassment allegations. Yes, his brother Chris, a.k.a. Fredo, used his position at CNN to try and manipulate his brother's standing in the governorship. And worse, perhaps, New York Attorney General Letitia James has, for reasons not clear to anyone who understands basic law, is all but dropping any further investigation or moves toward prosecution in light of Cuomo's resignation. But the worst? Left-winger actor and game show host Alec Baldwin took to various social media outlets to lament the resignation and blaming, get this, cancel culture. Now look, rightly so. He was crucified by online followers, even those of obvious liberal bent. Here's the thing, though. Look back again, just a bit. Whether it's Marion Barry in the District of Columbia or Al Franken in the Senate, it won't take long for Andrew Cuomo to be rehabilitated by big media or big tech and big left in general. Oh, sure. He'll get the 40 lashes with the air whip. Meaning, you know, he won't get whipped, but they'll make it look like it, i.e. he'll be off some invite lists for a year, maybe two. But does anyone of any rational thought actually believe we have seen the last of Andrew Cuomo? Does anyone truly believe Fredo, as Rush Limbaugh used to call Chris Cuomo, won't use his position at CNN as the full-time apology committee to start and then develop on as the full-time vengeance bureau when the all clear is sounded? Marion Barry, reelected as mayor of D.C. Al Franken, already rumblings about him getting back in the politics game. Trust me, Andrew Cuomo is not going away, especially with, seemingly anyway, all criminal proceedings thrown off to the side of the road. There is one sheriff up there that said it's not done. Folks, it's done. Believe me, when I warn this, do not be surprised to see Andrew Cuomo jump into any and all Trump witch hunts, which are, of course, are going to continue to take place as long as President Trump stays active in wanting what's best for this country, especially in light of the fact Donald Trump had zero to do with Governor Cuomo's undoing in the first place. It's all on Andrew Cuomo, unless, of course, you're part of that lunatic element where Alec Baldwin resides, then, of course, it's just cancel culture. Going to take a quick break, enjoy a little music, Get yourself some coffee or some wine, beer, water, and I'll regale you. This one will go out to Andrew Cuomo. It's what Vito calls Hank's porn song. It's a great song by Stanley Clarke and George Duke. Let it roll. You are listening to Hank Jones, Poly Sports. I am Hank Jones, of course, part of Global Patriot Radio here on Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com. Find us at that address. Find us specifically by going to the live button, clicking on it, and then going down to the right-hand corner and finding Global Patriot Radio under live chats. You may also call in, of course, 319-527-6706. You can listen in that way. People do that all the time. You can also interact with the show, if you like, by hitting the one icon that tells your host, whether it is me or any of our other hosts, hey, I got something to say. I want to contribute. Just do it with class, decorum, clean, etc. Hey, look, I don't mind the dropping of F-bombs or S-words, but when you say crude stuff like Hunter did a couple weeks ago, that is nasty. We don't need that. No, we do not. Hey, let's get to Poly Sports. Or not. There's really nothing good here in Poly Sports. Look, the Olympics are over. Nobody seems to want to upset the apple cart that has become name, image, and likeness. And honestly, the politicians and the athletes that are part of the liberal madness, they're tired of accidentally contradicting each other. Seriously, tired of apologizing to each other. You know, here's a question that somebody asked me, and I talked about it with Vito a little bit. You know, there are, you know, press, and as we get closer to college football season, but you have media days, for instance. In the Big Ten, schools take three players to media days. Players also do interviews during the week, but usually like with Big Ten Network or Big Ten Radio or whatever conference. It begs the question, are players going to expect NIL money for that? I wonder. Coaches do, I believe, get something in their contracts for their weekly shows, whether it's radio or television. I could be wrong on that. It might be part of, you know, expectation, and it's not a separate remuneration. But, you know, should players benefit from that? I don't know. I mean, it begs this question. If you're, you know, if you're Global Patriot Radio or any other, especially some of the sports, strictly sports-themed shows here on Blog Talk Radio outside of Global Patriot, you know, are those shows, are they going to ever have access to college athletes? Are college athletes going to expect money to do interviews? It's a good question. I've thought about that. I don't have any in mind. I've talked about or thought about trying to invite some players on, but now I would be kind of skittish about broaching that subject. I mean, really, if they say, well, what will you pay me? If we don't have a budget like that, Global Patriot, I'm certainly not going to pay for it out of pocket just to talk to a 20-year-old and talk to my nephews for free. And they're as insightful, if not more so, on the state of things in this world than 20-year-old football players. Not to discount 20-year-old football players. They're smart kids. I will say it again. Don't think that because they're athletes, they're dumb or that they're coddled. Yes, they're coddled, but you know what? You cannot excel in organized college football or pro football as an idiot. You've got to know a playbook. There's so much you have to know. I mean, a quarterback has to see a defense, instantly react, instantly think of an alternate play. Linemen, receivers, both have to change things on the fly. Backfield, the running back has to change where he lines up sometimes. All that. And it's not just that. I mean, they have to be able to think logically. It's not just learning a playbook. It's understanding logic. It's understanding a lot of things. Consequential things, you know, as a result of how they play or where they go or whatever. I mean, they have to understand that. It's not easy. So yes, I'm not against NIL like I was. I'm really not, because frankly, they should benefit. I'm not against NIL like I was, but I am not in the camp of should they be compensated for every little interview that they do or every little, I mean, I don't think they expect to be compensated when they go visit a children's hospital, for example. And I don't think they think that, but you know, if a guy, a local radio station in Iowa City or Bloomington, Indiana or Lincoln, Nebraska or wherever, Stillwater, Oklahoma, if they want to interview a kid, are kids going to start expecting to be paid for that? I don't know. Is it a slippery slope? We'll see. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat senator, he voiced strenuous objection to the $3.5 trillion gargantuan budget bill. He said it could be grave consequences. Don't worry, though. Along with the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill, Senator Manchin voted in favor of both. Let's go to some social network stuff. One good meme I've seen. It's a picture of Dopey Joe, and it says, "I'm Joe Biden, and I forgot this message." I know, it's cruel. It's not funny in a lot of ways, but it's certainly apropos. There's another one that says, 200 days of Biden. Border crisis, gas crisis, Middle Eastern crisis, inflation crisis. Yipper. This one from a friend of mine, Rich, who was on the show, you remember, January 6th, on his way home from the Stop the Steal rally. Remember that? Remember when Rich was on? Yeah. So Rich came on the show, and Rich is somewhat active on social media. Sometimes he goes off Facebook and does the usual, "I'm through," but you know, he gets it. You know, it's numbers. It's strictly numbers when you're talking about, you know, social media. Anyway, here's a post he made the other day, really good one. He says, if you really needed any more proof that the world is going to hell and that liberalism is mental illness, I'll provide the proof right here and now. Ready? Are you sure? This is how completely mentally ill and lost the liberal mind has become. California Assembly Member Christina Garcia has introduced Assembly Bill 367, the Menstrual Equity Act for All. Or I'm sorry, the Menstrual Equity for All Act of 2021. The bill would require all public schools serving students in grades 6 to 12 to provide free menstrual products and stock at least 50% of restrooms with feminine hygiene products at all times. The bill also says that the free products are not limited for girls and women, but also for biological males. Let that sink in. Do they even understand anatomy? Physiology? Are they going to bleed from ? Ah, I got it now. In school, too. There in the boys' bathroom. As he put it, if it's bleeding, you should probably see a doctor. And as Indy Hawk says, in the vein of Bill Engvall, comedian Bill Engvall, and there's your sign. Yes, folks, Assembly Bill 367 in California that allows menstruation equity for all to include boys' bathrooms and locker rooms. I mean, do you even, I mean, here you go. Or even this. And welcome, Annie, Southern Sense, to the show or to the chat room. She is in here. Good to see you, Annie. Hope you're doing okay. I'll tell you what, and also in response to this little California AB 367, this is the rage it inspires within me.
So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnam invasion to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. And a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in the classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up on my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him, while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle album.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the work brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why? Say it! Say it!
All right, I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards.
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Good teacher. He really seems to care. About what, I have no idea.
And that, folks, is how most conservatives feel when they're faced with the stuff that we're hearing every day in the news. It's not, oh my God, it's not, what can we do? It's, ah, ah. And you know what? God forbid a Sam Kinison, may he rest in peace, that a Sam Kinison type would ever approach Dopey Joe at a press conference. God forbid that mindset would ever hold Jen Psaki accountable at a press conference. But that's what we're feeling these days. We get it. I mean, it's not a complicated thing. It's not insurmountable. It goes back to this. We've let these things happen. We've let this all happen. But, you know, that's where we are. So we're going to have to scream. That's what it boils down to. I'm going to take out of here early, but I'm going to leave you with one more story. I'm picking out early. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going up to get fitted for a tux. As I talked about, my daughter is getting married out in Washington State at the beginning of September. So I've got to go get my tux done. And we are exactly 3 weeks to the day from when I travel out there. And that's when they said, get in here. So, but I'm going to leave you with this. This is the final piece of insanity for today. I don't expect anyone at this point. You've got to be hitting your limit when you hear this. Oregon Governor Kate Brown, she's taken education to a new level, downward, a new downward level. She signed a bill that permits students in that state to graduate the need to prove proficiency in reading, writing, or math. Now, again, Oregon Governor Kate Brown has signed a bill allowing students to graduate from high school in the state of Oregon without needing to prove proficiency in reading, writing, and math. This is beyond rational thinking. This is beyond mere lunacy. This is beyond idiocy. This is just, what is this? To their credit, Republicans have come out against the bill claiming, quote, it lowers expectations for our kids. Really? Worse, there was some bipartisan support. Here's what they said. New standards for graduation will help benefit the state's Black, Latino, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, tribal, and students of color. I'm going to read that again. He also said that the new standards for graduation will help benefit the state's Black, Latino, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, tribal, the real good news, it could also stay in effect for as much as 5 years. Now, here's the shock. The Oregonian, and let's face it, the Oregonian isn't exactly noted for its conservative bent, if you will. Oregonian urged Governor Brown to veto the bill. Here's what the Oregonian said. Oregon schools were among the last in the country to reopen to in-person instruction during the pandemic. In an editorial, our legislators should be focused on how to help students regain the ground they've lost after a year and a half of distance learning and hybrid instruction, not on lowering our standards. This is where the head firmly meets the wall in a swinging motion. Look, I'm not going to pull punches. I'm not going to pretend that quote-unquote communities of color don't often align with the left and or the Democratic Party. The majority still vote that way. I'm not excusing it. I'm not condemning it, condoning it, et cetera. I'm just explaining it. So when you hear that slap in the face or read that slap in the face to communities of color, where communities of color are literally told by a communication from the governor's communication office, hey, we're helping you out because otherwise you're too dumb. That's what they're saying, folks. Let me put it in another way that might make sense. I sat on a church group several years ago before gay marriage was endorsed by this national church body. In fact, before the Supreme Court ruled that that states had to allow gay marriage. But there was a couple within the church, both widowed, elderly. They came to the governing body, if you will, asking for the permission to do a commitment ceremony, not a marriage, a commitment ceremony in the church. Now, this could have, believe it or not, according to the Presbyterian Book of Order, it could have put both the session and the pastors in some hot water in terms of church polity. Why? Because it's not a sacrament. Marriage, technically, within the Presbyterian Church is not a sacrament, by the way. But the point is, it wasn't endorsed. At that time, the Book of Order read that a pastor would observe fidelity in marriage or chastity in singleness. What this couple was wanting, and they're nice people, but what this couple was wanting was an endorsement of quote-unquote non-chastity in singleness or quasi-chastity in a non-marriage. Now, where I'm going with this, there were people in that group that were lefties, that were pro-gay marriage. Good people. I'm not, you know, and believe it or not, I'm not that anti-gay marriage, just like the way some people would think, and for reasons that have nothing to do with quote-unquote what the Bible says or it's just not that important to me, believe it or not. It's just not. But anyway, these people were saying, oh, how wonderful. They found love again. But here was the thing. They didn't want to do a real marriage because they didn't want to forego Social Security benefits. Now, I get it. It's an economic reality, blah, blah, blah. But really? It had come to that? And I pointed out later on, I couldn't point it out then because one of the persons asking for it sat there in the meeting during the vote. But what I pointed out to these people later on is, look, for you folks that are all on the gay marriage train, you just slapped all your gay couples and gay friends in the face by telling this couple it's okay. There was nothing stopping this couple from making it legal. There was nothing that necessitated, quote-unquote, a commitment ceremony in a church. People would have known they were committed. People would have known that they weren't married. People wouldn't have cared. And frankly, you know, when that came, that also went for session members. And when a session member at that time had come out as gay, there were people that were kind of like iffy, like, ooh, and I said, wait a second. I was never asked that question, whether I was, you know, whether I observed fidelity in marriage or chastity in singleness. So it's off the table. Either you ask it of everybody or you ask it of nobody. You don't ask it of someone because you think they might be gay if you're not going to ask it of everyone. What's good for one is good for all in this case. But in this case, here were these people saying, oh, they found love. They slapped their gay friends in the face with it. And that's where I'm going here with this. We're telling communities of color, you're too stupid to graduate if we hold you to standards of reading and writing and arithmetic. And the state of Oregon has just done that. And the Democratic Party has done that, as they do when they say minorities and communities of color don't have access to getting IDs. It's the same slap in the face. And we let it go. We let it go unpunished, if you will. Or certainly less, we let it go without any accountability. So yeah, that's a good way to end the show, is talk about Oregon requiring less standards for their graduates. Yeah, isn't it? I mean, literally, it just goes right into this. Because at the end of that song, in the movie Easy Rider, the character Captain America, played by Peter Fonda, says, "We blew it, Billy." Well, state of Oregon, you blew it. And with that, folks, I am off to get me a tux, but not before I send you out with a little bit of Jeff Beck. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Sue jumped on late at the end, but I think the music freaked her out. Big Sister was on listening. Indy Hawk was in the chat, as was S. Bonner 392 for a little bit. Annie from Southern Sense. Every Friday, Annie is on. Not sure if she's still on Big Blog Talk Radio, but even when she is simulcast elsewhere. Go to Southern Sense Radio. Just Google search it. Google search it. Southern Sense Radio. Do that, and you'll find out where Annie is and when. A lot of sense coming out of her, by the way. Not just Southern Sense, just good common sense. So, and Sue's back in. Hey, Sue, how you doing? Hope you're doing okay. But again, as I said, folks, I got to go get my tux. I got to go get my tux fitted. So let's hope that I can fit into it, folks, and we'll send you off with a little Jeff Beck. See you next week, and thanks for being here, folks. We'll be right back. Good night, folks. Have a good week.